Good morning, Chris.
Morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. It's, before we hit the record, I one of those spaces where I don't understand what my tech is doing right now, but hey,
That's
at
what
least
tech does.
I know, at least it's not like 2010 and I'm walking in front of a class of 30 and wondering who messed with my LCD projector cables, right?
Yeah, I guess.
You can, or being called in to help somebody else, because I don't know what happened. The cables have been switched around.
It's
I
funny you
mean,
say that because maybe
it's a real thing though, eh? Like, you remember that? Like, I don't know if I would be able to say it's so 2010, but you ask anyone that's kind of down that digital rabbit hole, they remember that moment. Somebody messed with my cables.
a month and a half ago, my Breitling's projector stopped working and they had to replace it, and it was going to take about a week. And I said to our library tech, there's no way I can go a week without having the Breitling's. Like, my whole the way I operate revolves around it, so it's going to take me a week to change my practice, and you'll put it back in. It's going to take me a week to get back. So it was funny because everybody was laughing at me. So while they were all laughing, I went and I grabbed the projector. Like, we still use it, right, for assemblies in the gym. I brought it into my room and I hooked it up to my computer. And it was one of those things where, like, after recess, I'd come in my room and I'm like, "Who touched the projector? The cables are all moved around," or whatever. So I recently experienced a little bit of that. And every time we have an assembly in the gym, I have to like check with the tech crew over and over again to make sure that everything's hooked up right, the audio's gonna work. And it's almost like Groundhog Day. Every time we do it, something goes wrong. And I'm always the one saying to the kids, "But you do this every time. So what happened this time?" And they're looking at me, they're like, "You never do it." And I just laugh and walk away with my fingers crossed, hoping it's gonna work.
It's so true, eh? It's so true. The fingers crossed. I can I it's and what's remarkable is the assumption that when we walk away from tech, I played in a conversation this morning on Twitter before we started chatting, and someone was talking about how Storify is shutting it's shuttering. It's not I think in spring 2018, Storify is not going to exist anymore. So, someone was talking about how it's the unfortunate and how unfortunate that is because it's a valuable tool for individuals to kind of curate those Twittered conversations, other stuff too. But and I kind of stepped in. I said, I get it, but I'm kind of okay with that too. I think that it's really easy to get used to the kind of fuzzy logic that the internet is forever. And every once in a while, I kind of like expiration dates on these websites. I like that they give people heads up too. It's like, come on, figure it out. But there is an end here in sight. It makes me think about what happens with free tools, so when things are not subsidized or heavily marketed, that they do disappear. I also know that even in this moment, there's a high likelihood that something else is being developed in the background. So yes, Storify might be disappearing, might be, and you're going to declare the sort of like the expiration date, but I've seen other things rise from those ashes where there's a new product that kind of pops out, or you find out it's been bought out by Flipgrid, or you imagine that. That would actually be a pretty powerful grouping, eh? Flipgrid buys out Storify. I know that's a it's like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, you gotta, do you agree? Like, you see these things kind of disappear and then all of a sudden they kind of pop up. Someone else has grabbed the piece. Sometimes we know ahead of time, but yeah, I'm not too bugged. I'm not too bugged by Storify disappearing. I like the idea that stuff can die on the web. Like, I'm okay with that. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I also think this is the new landscape, right? Things come and go fast. And when I mean fast, like, a couple of years. Also, bigger companies tend to buy the smaller companies. Like, I think as you're explaining it, I'm thinking, well, that's kind of the landscape that we live in now. Whereas when I moved to the region I live in now, there was still a lot of factories and stuff, and they were slowly starting to close down. And people were bothered for a number of different reasons. But it was almost, one of the things about it was, it's because these factories had been around for 30 to 50 years, you know, so nobody ever imagined that they would just shut down one day. And so I think in that time, it was not the norm. But I think today, the landscape of the tech world, of these startups, of these really cool apps and free tools that we might use, they're going to come and go. Like you, I get it, but some hurt more than others. Like when I first started podcasting, I don't even remember the name of the app anymore, but it was an app that I learned how to podcast using. It was like Google Hangouts, but better. And then I remember one day I went to do my podcast with my buddy and it was gone. You went to the site to log in and it said, oh, thanks for all your time and efforts, but we've decided to shut this thing down. And I remember just thinking, why? Everything's working well. You're still fairly new. I got no answers and I just moved on. But I hear what you're saying. When you said StoryFi was leaving, I'm not bothered by that, probably because I'm not a big fan of the tool. It doesn't bother me, but I get it. And you're right. Something bigger and better is right behind the door. We just don't know what it is yet. You know, somebody will tweet about it sometime and say, hey, check this out. It'll curate all your Twitter chats and whatever on the fly. And you're like, oh, StoryFi. No. You know, Flipify or something. There'll be some new name and... Who knows, right?
You know, well, there's actually a product out there right now, participate.com. Yeah, that's I never really landed comfortably in using StoryFi. There was some stuff. I tried it a couple times. I never had many moments where I thought I want to aggregate all of my tweets into one long conversation, which when I think about it afterwards, I was a participant in a lot of other people's conversations, so I guess my stuff is kind of there somewhere, but I never had the drive to kind of put that all onto the same, almost Brandon, like a Padlet space, like dropping all the lingo, eh? I didn't, and when I read that, I just thought it just reaffirms a frame for me that use the tools that are in front of you. See, like, and the bigger the buffet, I'll say, the better. So look for a bunch of different tools. Don't invest if they're asking you to pay. You know, understand that type of payment can put you inside of a silo. Sometimes that payment also can keep you from being truly mobile in your learning, because then you have to use that one thing and maybe your crew ain't there. So you're kind of limited in who you can kind of talk to and connect to. And really, there's a lot of tools that I have come to where I'm like, okay, I don't need to use this anymore. Gone, erased, content has disappeared. And then a couple years later, I come back to it. I'm like, okay, there's something now again for me to do, but I'm not gonna carry the load of worry or the data on my device to say I'm gonna hang on to this forever. But I'm curious, I mean, you said that, you know, StoryFi wasn't necessarily at the center of your wheelhouse. What app would you have any heartbreak over the loss of an app? Which is the one?
That's a good question.
Or a digital tool. Let's say the digital tool, that the one that, you know, if they decided to, if it changed at all. And so this is the thing. It's one of those absolute, because some of the conversation that I saw around the StoryFi, it was like there was a real catch your breath. Really? Like the ice water bucket challenge, just that look on the people's face of abject horror of what just happened, right? What is the digital tool that if it were disappeared, you'd be scrambling to figure out how to do your job, your work?
That's a really good question. A couple of things. Number one, as you know, I've been on our last, not last episode, but the episode before where we talked about breaking up with the internet.
Yeah.
At this point, it's like, I have no love lost right now for any apps. Like I'm in that gray zone where I'm trying to move away. You know, get what I'm saying? So I would say, as like in my work, if Google Suite for Education disappeared and I didn't have access to my drive and the way my workflow operates right now because of that tool, I think I'd be a little bit bothered. But I don't know, like you and I use Hangouts, YouTube Hangouts to connect. So if it went away, well, I guess we'd use Skype or something. I don't have one anymore. Like if Facebook went away tomorrow, I'd be a little bit sad because I like to see my friends and stuff on there, but I'll move on because we're all going to lose it. It's going to be gone for everybody. But like you said, I have faith that in the next week, something new, a new Facebook will pop up. Someone who's sitting on the fringes, you know, starving, waiting to bust out their creation. Why not? Facebook is gone. Who knows why or where they went? And this new kid will pop up with his or her new app, and everybody will jump on there, and it'll take over again. That's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm feeling. I wanted to. Oh, it's gone now. I had an idea about. Oh, I want to say something about Storify that will bring a smile to your face. I don't use anything to curate, and I didn't like Storify in the first place. But in an AQ course I was taking, there was like a 10-week challenge or something like that, where every week there was like a challenge for the participants in the AQ course, and it revolved around technology and tools, so 21st century type things, modern day stuff that educators can use to connect with people and to build their professional learning community. Okay. And one of the challenges was to use Storify. And I remember sitting there listening to my instructor explain it and just shaking my head like, okay, well, this is going to be one of those weeks where I go through the motions and I comply. I give the teacher exactly what they want so I can get my passing grade and I can move on to the next week. So the course comes to an end. Some colleagues end up taking the course in the next term. And the first thing they say to me is, tell us about Storify and how you use it. You know, we're mind boggled, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I don't use it. And they said, but we read your challenge. You know, you did this, and you did that. I said, yeah, I did this and I did that for the challenge. And then I ran from that challenge as fast as I could because I don't like the tool. I don't use the tool. But I had to use it for the course because I couldn't say, hey, I don't like this challenge, so I'm just not doing it and pass the course. That's not an option. And they were like dumbfounded. And I said, well, hold on. Before you start, you know, judging me, talk to so-and-so and so-and-so, and they'll tell you which challenges they balked at. And which challenges they were like, oh, dude, I don't like this. So I'm just going to get it done and comply and move on. And then you could see like the light bulb came on in their head. And I'm like, for some of the challenges, I was eating it up. Like for the whole week or 2 weeks, I was like hip deep in the challenge. I did what was required. And then I gave, you know, 200% more. Because I really enjoyed myself and I was learning from it. And I felt like it was something that I could, that was really transforming me. But then there were the other challenges where it's like, okay, you know, I can get this done in an hour and I'll never have to do it again.
Sorry, that was didn't have my mic unmuted. It didn't matter. I wasn't talking. That was a total like gymnastics flub. Didn't have my hand on the mouse. I was, yeah. it's pretty, you make me think about moments in the classroom where you introduce, so me as teacher, in front of the kids, and you introduce this thing that it's kind of got your brain on fire, and the kids that use it deliver the thing back to you, like whatever product, whatever activity that you work on in class. And sometimes I get that some of the tools that we use are intended to increase productivity. And then sometimes there's tools that are meant to spark creativity. And then there's other tools that just sit beyond our horizon. And those are some of the inspirational tools, because you kind of get what it can do, but you're just fascinated more by the fact it's doing it. And then you have to do a lot of work to kind of figure out how to get up to that exemplar use of it. When I think about the tools that you introduce in classroom, whether it's, pen and paper, whatever, and for the kids in the class that kind of knock it out of the park really, really quickly, I wonder how often that happens for them. They're actually using the tool and they're, like you said, kind of going through the motions, producing the thing, but really it doesn't hold that same inspiration for them. You may be on that scheme of inspiration, like it's that Uber tool down the road, but for some of the individuals you're working with, it's not. It's kind of matter of fact. And it might not even be that they're actually exposed to it. It's just familiar looking, familiar feeling. It's like another tool that another teacher's introduced. So you bring to mind for me about that student experience, because I've been in that space too, where I've been in a classroom myself as a student, and the teacher has introduced either a concept, a tool, or a destination that is overly familiar to me. And I go through the motions of doing it. I don't hold any negative feelings towards it. I don't hold any negative feelings towards the actual, let's say, activity. I think often where I go is I feel like I should have spoke up. I should have asked for more. I should have asked for something different. And just kind of, I want to try doing this a different way. I sort of comply with the easy thing, like you said, to sort of either get the task or the mark or to move on. But I have done that, where I've just done it and not really challenge myself, not the actual task, challenge myself to step up and say something. And you make me think of students that probably quite often do the exact same thing. It was, they'll do the task, they'll kind of roll through it. But what you're trying to observe is the teacher, because you're so caught up in the, ooh, I've got them using Twitter in the classroom. Like that success story, the true metric of success has to be measured from the distance that the kid or the student is able to run with it, not by how great you feel for introducing it. So it's and that stuff is harder to measure, right? Because the farther the kid, any activity that takes the kid farther from the specific classroom center, it becomes more and more difficult to assess. And it's that interesting frame of the more authentic a task is. And I think the air quotes around authentic are, it looks like something in the real world. If your classroom doesn't exist in the real world, then what's your capacity to assess what you're actually seeing? And the default then sometimes is to fall back on the actual learning process, because we as teachers can observe that. But are we as teachers able to effectively assess the marketability of an app that a kid creates? Can we effectively sort of say, yes, you know what, that loaf of bread that you just baked, you'd be able to sell that at the market and make a ton of cash? So the more authentic, the more difficult to assess. And I think, sitting as a student myself in the past, that's the thing that I don't always step up to do, which I should. I don't know why my brain doesn't do it, because it's my frame as a teacher. But I have been in that trap where I kind of go along to get it done because I am angling towards the mark.
I deal with that all the time, where we're doing something at school and one or two kids are like, I just don't want to do this. And it's like, well, what do you want to do? Like, my big joke is, well, you can't leave early. Like, there's no, you get this done and I can send you home. Like, we're here all day kind of thing. And then I do my best to work at, what is it about this that doesn't interest you? Or what is it about this that we can manipulate in a way so that you're engaging with what kind of I'm looking at and what I need to see you be able to do or talk about or demonstrate. It happened a couple of times this week. One kid was really honest and said, I just don't want to be here today. I'm really tired. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. And they went on and on. And what was really cool is I I went into their space. So as they started talking to me, I thought, okay, they're talking to me and they're in my space. Now I need to get into their space. And I did. And what ended up happening was I truly just sat there and listened. I listened to them and I tried to understand their perspective and why they were coming to me thrown off on this day. And I just said, okay, well, I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but like at this very moment in time, what could you be doing that's going to get you focused on school? Because like, it's going to be a long, rough day. I said to them, I've heard your perspective. I understand where you're coming from. It sounds to me like your head's just not in the game. But like, we still have 5 hours ahead of us. So what can we do? How can I help you do something that's going to get your head into the game so that this day is not a write-off? And that was a difficult conversation because they still weren't interested. And I was trying to be like, listen, I'm in your space here. Like, you have me where you want me. I can't tell you to sit in a corner and do nothing all day. Like, that's not an option, right? And I have to tell you that if this continues, I have to talk to your parents. Like, we can't operate like this. And they said, well, okay, you know what? Can I just go in the back room, do some doodling, maybe grab a Chromebook and read a little bit on the internet? I don't know. Can I just start there? I said, yeah, okay. Well, it's better than, you know, disrupting the class and walking around the room and telling your friends how this sucks and you don't want to do it or whatever. So I said, I'm going to check in with you in a bit. I want to see where you're at. So I let the student go and do that, and I keep working with everybody else kind of thing. And after about 20 minutes, a student came to me, and the student said, is it okay if I try to do the activity that the students are doing, like digitally? Is it okay if I just go into my Google Drive and just try this? I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if I'm going to succeed. I don't know if it's going to help me feel better. But you said that you were willing to let me try something different. I said, yeah, like if it's going to move you forward, let's just try it. And so the student went off and got back to work. And then later on came to me and said, okay, I think I'm good. Let me show you what I did. And they start talking about it. And next thing you know, they're back in the game. Now that's a good story. It doesn't always work like that. Sometimes it goes like this. I'm not doing this. Okay. Can I do something to help you kind of wrap your brain around this concept or this activity? No, I don't want to do any of this. Okay. So like, I'm getting that you're feeling some anxiety here. You're being defiant. You're not being disrespectful. So I'm still working with you here. I'm going to walk away now because there's 24 other people who need me and I can't just sit with you for the whole day. So I'll check in with you. Check in, not doing anything. Okay, it's recess. Go outside, get some air. And the whole day's like a negotiation. And then it's finally like, okay, well, I'm just, you know, just go chill. I'm going to call your parents during my planning time and let them know what's happening here. Because what's happening here, they're gonna agree with me. It's not appropriate. Like, it's not the time or the place. And you know, it doesn't end nicely, right? Like, they're upset. I'm not very happy either. I'm doing everything I can to try to like give them something that will help engage them. So I'm not feeling very effective. They're probably not feeling I'm very effective either. Like, you know, I could tell you about all the good times, but there's a lot of bad times too. I'd just rather not dwell on those.
That, I think that touched on our conversation from earlier this week, was the that one kid, you know, and you have those challenges that sort of exist outside the toolbox, for sure. And I hear you. Much of what you're saying is a very familiar context to me. I have students that it's even you know, even to sort of identify the thing that is the barrier from the moment can take a week or so to unwind. And you feel like you're going through the same motions in that relationship of, is today a day to get to work, or is today a day where we're going to be working on that barrier again? And it's interesting because they need to be worked on separately. To do them at the same time, it's that sort of brute force approach to trying to understand it. I find it doesn't work that well. It always has to be worked on away. It's the challenge then is finding the away time to work on it, whether or not I'm researching things for myself or making other community connections or making contact with parents or having interview time and counseling time with the actual student. So getting through those moments is it's long game. Definitely long game. Do you want to try?
So Chris.
Oh, do it.
No, go ahead. I was gonna ask you to talk about what we kind of mentioned or what you mentioned before we hit broadcast this morning.
Yeah, no, I was gonna. That's funny. I'm gonna go there. So I thought as we kind of come up to the new year, no resolutions here. We're not going there, but I thought maybe kind of a course review may be in order. And this past week, I went back through and I listened to bits and I reread some of the transcripts and just tried to find not the heart, but kind of the spaces where we landed and we had something meaty to say or to play with. So I started with, I went from 2 to 13 and I just grabbed a little kind of like a bit off there. We'll throw it down. We'll see if there's anything that comes to mind after the fact. So, I mean, dude, we're going back. Well, it's September, October, November, like at least 3 months worth of ideas that we had kind of pop in and just curious how it looks now. So back in episode 2, we were talking about community connections and we landed on some of those times where, you know, what it means to sort of be out at the hockey games or at the mall and sort of being recognized as someone that is you're seen as a teacher. You're feeling like a non-teacher to a degree because you're out there maybe with your own family. And just wondering, what does that bring to mind now, going back all the way to that idea of that theme of community connections?
That's a great question. It's a nice reflection. Where am I personally at now? I'm still where I was months ago. It's still wonky. It's still wonky to run into. And if I'm off, tell me. So I'll just do my little spiel and then you tell me. But
yeah.
It's still weird to run into certain people that just. You just never got a good vibe off of, or you feel a certain way about how they feel towards you. And then there's the other side, the flip side, where you run into somebody and the experience that you had with that family or that child was amazing. It was a great connection. Which reminds me of a tweet. So a tweet that was sent out yesterday by a French teacher at my old school. She tweeted something out and one of her parents tweeted back and I jumped in because they're talking about school, but then they were talking about how awesome, it is to have a solid parent at home and a solid teacher at school. And I had taught one of the children of that parent. And so I chimed in and said, there's nothing better than a solid homeschool, connection. Nothing. It's amazing the way it works. That parent tweeted back and said that they missed me. Whether that's true or not, it was great to hear something positive from that parent, because my experiences with that parent and her children was an excellent experience. Like it just worked. You know what I mean? Like I felt like as a teacher, I was heard and respected. And I believe that as the parent, she felt that she was heard and respected, and the way that we worked back and forth was great. And because of that, if I see this person in public, I would love to say hello. And I'm thinking that if that parent and those children saw me in public, they would love to say hello, and it would be a good experience. Whereas there's other people that I'm sure would see me and not want to say hello. To me, that's just life. Like, and it's partly my personality, partly their personality, whatever. A lot goes into it. But the theme of community connection, when you said it, it's running deeper for me now because of some activities we're going to be doing at school where I'm going to need to lean on community connections. And so my spidey sense is a little bit heightened when you say that, because that's a road I'm going to want to travel down in a deeper way. But how has it changed? Well, first, let me know, am I talking about what you thought I might talk about? And the second thing is has it changed for you now that you kind of bring it back to the discussion table?
Yeah, no, you're totally on point. Totally on point. I think one of our the community connections, where I came at it was telling the story about asking the students to pop their hats. So being out in the movie theaters and just kind of walking past a couple of my former students and say, hey, gentlemen, can you please take your hats off? Because our school had that rule of no hats in school, and watching the students comply and then having a little bit of laugh about it and saying, you know, and they're like, ah, Clough, you got us. I'm like, yeah, sorry, guys. It's hard to put the teacher away, right? And then you were sharing stuff about, I think, hockey experience was your starting point and sort of being out in the community that way and being seen with your family, being involved with that. So you're entirely on point. For me, I think this has become a result of me with starting to measure my digital community or look at my digital community in a little bit more of a measured way and realizing the reach of my digital community was beyond my grasp. Like, I just didn't have, it was too much. I had too many places where I felt like I was kind of diffused in my digital spaces. So what has happened is, I think as I've sort of pulled back and unsubscribed and deleted and removed myself from some digital spaces that were just like doors that I'd left open and relationships that I had never nurtured, I am now more, I find, in a space where I'm looking forward to meeting individuals in real life. And I've just kind of come to accept that. Like, I'm actually, you know, if I would love to run into parents, I would love to run into the students in the community. I'm thinking thoughts like, I, you know, for them to see me with my family, I want them to see what is the in real life version of me. And I think that's a little bit of a new space in my mind. But if I had to tag it to something, I think it's the, without the energy that I'm putting into the virtual spaces, and I still exist in many of them, but where I've sort of curated ones and made it a little bit more bespoke, where it's where I really, really crave to be. The sort of counter effect is that I'm looking forward to meeting people out and about. And I think the other thing that has happened too, is if we just talk about the time it takes to spend time with people online, inevitably you go do that, you're not meeting people in real life. So I've freed up moments now where if I'm not investing in sort of reaching out to these digital spaces all the time, inevitably I'm going to be mobile and doing things in real life because I'm not plunked down in front of a computer or my device. So that's where I be.
Throw down the next one.
All right.
I'm curious to, I mean, you mentioned this before we went on air, but I wasn't sure how deep this ran. I wasn't sure exactly what particular nugget you pulled from each podcast. So I'm kind of like pumped for the next one.
So episode 3 really did center around the bag of work, but the bag of work was sort of the comedy that I think you and I landed on. And at the heart of that, there was two other things that were happening. The necessity of taking care of business and finding time to take care of the actual work of teachers that can't be done in the classroom, and laying that against family time. So that idealism of bringing the stuff home and thinking, yep, I'm going to have a great work weekend, and, you know, I've got it kind of mapped out. I got to have this stack of marking, quote unquote. Like, no teacher has never said that. I got a stack of marking I got to get through. But the bag of work became the sort of the epitome of that. And the comedy fell in, like, you got to make sure you put it by the door. You don't want to leave it at home. Like, you get the work done, you forget it at home. You don't get it done at school, and then you forget it on the desk at school. So the bag of work was the frame. So where are you at on that?
That's funny you say that, because I brought home some stuff and I refused to put it into a bag because I didn't want to call it the bag of work. But with respect to that, it's that has brought on some great laughs for me at work, watching people coming in and out with just piles of stuff or their mini suitcase or, you know, just a pile of papers like being held to the chest. It brings a smile to my face. Okay. It brings me joy, because the first thing is I wonder, okay, well, did they do anything with that pile, or is it just the ceremonial pile, right? Like it's ceremonial sometimes, because when you get home, it's just not happening. So for me, I have been more intentional what I bring home, and I'm much more intentional about what I don't bring home. So I do my best to take care of things at school. So it's not a bag. It's just like a stack of papers with a clip on it that I just need to deal with, or I need to record about at home. But more than anything, the smile on my face when I see people trudging with their stuff is like, it just, for me, it's more comedic than anything. I guess it doesn't say a lot about my professionalism, but it's funny because it's so true. And it's kind of been like, it's kind of been something, an app that refreshes in the background. You never really notice it because it's just so common amongst teachers. But now it's like right on my radar, and I'm always kind of watching. Well, you know how, what's that show called? This hour has 22 minutes. You know how sometimes they do like skits about different things. Like I just saw one this morning. It's it was about Bitcoin, and it's give the gift of Bitcoin this holiday season. And the video is a guy who gets this, like, you know how when the Mint makes a new coin set, you get this really beautiful book, you open it up and inside are the coins. Well, this one, you know, for $5,000, you can get Bitcoin. And the guy opens up his thing and all the slots where the coin goes is empty, because Bitcoin it doesn't exist physically. And the guy's all excited about his new, it's the same type of thing. For me, it's comedy now, this bag of work. I don't know. Tell me what you think. Save me here, Clough.
No, it's the same, because we landed on that too. Just the, as you're desperately trying to wrap up your classroom on the Friday night, and you know, for me, my bag of work is a Metro grocery, like a grocery store recycled bag, right? And you can get a lot in there. And it's funny how that becomes the criteria. You're leaving your room. That's a success criteria. How much crap can I put into this, right? So you might have like a stack of paper, a bunch of duotangs. You're taking binders. You put the binders in. You're like, I got to reverse them, because the back of one has to be near the thin space of the other one. And then you sort of look down. You're like, oh, but I didn't secure. There's like loose sheets in there. So you take it all back out again. Like, just packing that. It wasn't here that we talked about the EDU Sherpa, but this is like the training ground for it, right? Like, you don't even get to that space where a Rodenizer could be the mobile administrator unless you've mastered the bag of work. It's like the beavers training, beavers or brownies stage to becoming a guide or a Cub Scout. Like, you got to do that work to say, okay, if you're going to pack it in, you better be able to pack it out again. So that whole, you know, reversing the binders, and oh, I didn't bring my favorite pens. So you're at home and you're like, I don't like ballpoint for doing the marking. I'll do it on Monday. I like fine liners, and those are all on my desk. So that there's comedy that's the prequel to the comedy of watching other people walk out with their bags of work. And, you know, we talked about, you know, when a teacher meets a teacher at the door and they both have double bags of work and their coffee and everything else they're taking home. Like, who opened? You got to hope that door has a bumper bar, because otherwise you're trying to shift the bag to the other hand. I get the comedy, right? There is a whole this hour's 22 minutes. and Canadian style, all the apologies that would ensue after that too. Oh, sorry, sorry. Yeah. Oh, sorry, sorry. Let me get the door for you. Oh, yes. Sorry, sorry, sorry. So there is a ton of comedy there. As far as the bag of work for me, one of the spaces that I've gone to is not, I fully accept that there's things that I'm going to have to do at home. What I'm not doing is committing in the moment that I have to take that home. So what I'm doing instead is trying to find on the fly ways of assessing and getting that paperwork done while the kids are actually in their quiet time. So I'm kind of teasing a little bit with what I would call observation and performance time. So where you're prompting the kids or just cajoling, I'm pulling back just a little bit of that. And my observation time where you're just assessing, you know, whole group assessment, I'm saying, okay, in these 5 minutes, I could do this. And I do it. That plays off, you know, one of our future topics here. But if I can save the time there, then I'm more likely to be able to target the exact thing that I need to take home. And also in that bag of work, tell me you haven't done this. You bring everything. So you're bringing stuff home that you, in your heart, you're like, I might not get to this, but if I have time. And dude, that's often the heaviest crap you bring home. Right? It's that long range planning. It's that textbook that you want to annotate. It's that, I don't know, that large art project that some kid has done that's made out of iron. And you're going to try and carry that home and shove it in the back of your car. Like, you know, that just means by next week, the kid's going to be saying, where's my art thing? Like, oh, it's been in the back of my car for a week and it's underneath, you know, groceries and the emergency jumper cables. So I'm looking at trying to find the spaces in the classroom time, in teaching time, were to find the efficiency so I'm not taking the stuff home.
Okay. You got me. You got me with the new digital piece. There have been times where my bag of work is a sticky note because everything I need to do, I can do digitally. So if I have to create a rubric, I have to do my newsletter, field trip forms, I just write it on. It's funny. I've got my mobile device. Why can't I just send myself a reminder? No, I write it on a sticky note and I attach the sticky note to my lunch bag because my lunch bag is coming home. Oh, dude, this is a whole other level. And when you mentioned EDU Sherpas and that the preparation for the Sherpa is the bag of work, like you have to go there first. You have to build that foundation. Hilarious.
And you know what? That post-it note, right? That post-it note. Heaven help us. If you've ever dared to put a post-it note on the face of your actual iPhone.
Because I'm not going there. I would never do that.
Because, you know, that moment, like you're just screaming redundancy. If you actually do write a post-it note and think to yourself, the best way to remind me about the things that I have to do on this post-it note is to stick it to my iPhone. So I've done that. I've actually done that. So, but that's also for me a part of just that collection of small bits that you take and you leave in the morning. Like I'm grabbing my wallet, I'm grabbing my iPhone, I'm grabbing my keys. I try and, you know, that's the basic tools that I got to make. Not sorry. Those are some of the tools, the cluster of tools that I have to make sure that I have with me. And because they could be anywhere in the house, I think if I put them in the what's that called, in a construction zone where they bring all the equipment into the one, it's like the launch space. I forget what they call it. But it's basically, you know, something new is going to be built and they have a fenced in area and all the resources are there. Do you remember, do you know what that's called? I'm dropping the name, but you've at least seen it once or twice.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I don't know what it's called.
So that's what I'm setting up in the morning with my coffee and my wallet, just so that I'm not running around. So, you want to try go ahead.
Jump in. Okay. Two things. The first thing is, I think we have time for one more.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, I'm not a coffee drinker. So another thing that brings me great joy is watching the staff get out of their car, slam the door with their foot, because one hand is holding the precious bag of work. The other hand is holding some type of Starbucks or Tim Hortons coffee. And I'm in the background dying, loving every minute of watching this person, these people negotiate their way into the building. And the care that they take to make sure the coffee or the tea or whatever their beverage of choice is, the care that is taken to ensure that liquid elixir survives entrance into the building. to me, it's unbelievable. It just kills me every time. So I had to say that. That could be another, you know, this hour has 22 minutes skit. But drop the last one on us. I don't know what it could be because there's so much Seinfeld nonsense you and I have talked about over the past 3 months.
I have to say, though, this is in, I think, you know, just the if I do a broad kind of a broad stroke over our, at this point, you know, our conversations, I think we've done a great job of pulling out some of the stuff that I haven't heard in some of the educational podcasts. I will say I haven't found this space. Now I'm biased. I'm on the inside. I'm finding stuff that's already inside of me. You and I are right. So of course this is like the absolutely best curated content I've ever come across because it's like we're generating it. But if I take a step outside the ego, and I'm more than I, you know, it's important to go there. I think what we've sort of flipped here is what it looks like from the inside and try to take, you know, acknowledge some of the ridiculousness of it. It doesn't make it less important. It doesn't make it less real, but put it in a frame that someone who might come across this podcast, they'll go, okay, I maybe kind of get it. And this might not be an educator. It's just someone that wants to hear how educators can be human and exist in their life at the same time that they're existing in the classroom. So I like that. So the last one for now, let's say, and maybe next week, if we can get to it at the end of this week, see if we can wrap up the list, or maybe over the next couple episodes, it's our year wrap up one. I think we mentioned this maybe even last week, but it's the idea of being the parent teacher trap. So that negotiating who's going to be the parent, who's going to be the person that's recognized as the teacher. You and I landed on the, you know, what do parent teacher interviews look like when we're going into the schools of our children and the other people are looking at us both as a parent and a teacher. Conversely, it's also what does it look like to turn that off when you go home? So when you are home, you realize that the primacy is to be the parent. But if those teacher veins run deep and you sort of have access not only to that side, but maybe information, like how easy is it to actually turn off the teacher brain when you're dealing with your own children? So we existed there. Parent, parent, teacher, teacher. How messed up is it for you to be in those multi roles?
I think I'm doing better at being the parent at home and not the teacher at home. But I also think that I'm doing better at being a bit of a parent at work when I'm a teacher, because I think what I'm seeing more and more is that I'm seeing students who sometimes need a parent. And I'm not really sure, like, I'm just trying to find the right words to explain that. Like, not that they just need someone to say to them, it's okay. You know, it's okay to cry right now and take your time. And like some people might say, well, teachers do that all the time too. But if for me, it's like it's a shift in my head. Like it's a shift, right? Like it's okay. They don't need me to stand here and be their teacher right now. They need me to stand here and be more of a parent, to be more accepting and compassionate, which sounds strange because that's what teachers are too. I can't find the right words, but I'm finding that at home, it's easier for me to just be the parent. At school, I'm finding that I'm turning my parent brain on a little bit more with certain kids who show me that they need that. And something that happened last night at hockey, sometimes when I'm at hockey, I'm a parent, but sometimes I switch on the teacher, especially when I'm watching another dad explain a drill or an activity that the kids are going to do. And there's just something about the way that they're explaining it. It's just not sitting well with me as a teacher. Like you're giving them too many tasks. They're not paying attention to you. No, they're not even looking at you. And I know some kids learn best that way, but most kids don't. So it's one of those things where it's like as soon as that individual stops talking, I jump in and I'll chunk it. You know, I'll say, okay, start with step one and step two. And then when we get to step three, we'll remind you. But start with one and two. This is what it looks like. Hey, everybody, look at me. I need to see your eyes so I know you're paying attention. Hey, Johnny, look at me, Johnny. Come on. And then, you know, and then the guy's looking at me like, why'd you do that? I'm like, because you told them what to do in 50 easy steps. After the third one, they turned away. They didn't hear a word you said. And then you're going to start yelling at them because they don't know how to do the drill. I'm like, well, where I come from, you know, that's not going to fly. So let me just jump in and try this or that. So that's where I'm at in my parent-teacher thing. The one that still got me, the one that still got me is the when I need to go and deal with my kids at school. How do I shift? What do I do? You know, understanding the teacher's role, but I'm not there as a teacher, I'm there as a parent. That one's gonna probably haunt me until my kids leave school. I know which side I'm more inclined to be on is the parent side, but I don't want to be a parent that comes into a classroom and inadvertently, you know, upsets the teacher with things I'm saying or my perspective. I don't want to do that. I don't want to upset anybody, but I need to advocate for my kids. And that means taking off my teacher hat, I think, and putting on the parent one, and like not just putting it on, but like tying it underneath the chin so it doesn't come off.
Yeah. So a couple things, if I could throw down, I remember being in a, at one of the heads meetings. So this is a few years back, when I was department head for alt ed in a high school, and sitting at one of those leadership meetings, and one of the art head, so the guy that was running the art department, in the middle of the conversation, and I don't remember the actual conversation. I think it was something connected with parent communication. So talking about making improvements to how we communicate with parents in the broad sense. And through that conversation, the art teacher proposed the way, basically what it came down to is he said, why is it that we have such a difficult time expressing our love of our students? And it really stuck with me, because in so many ways, that's what we say it about a lot of the stuff in the relationship. I love this classroom. I love that class. I love this course that I'm teaching. I love my schedule. Oh, I love the administrative team. But, you know, there's that kind of weird, itchy space where you actually make it more specific, where you say, I love my students. I love my students so wholeheartedly. And I'm imagining these conversations take place. I haven't experienced that conversation where you kind of felt like people are kind of head nodding when someone says that, but it doesn't feel participatory, where everyone kind of would jump in. It's almost like, oh, geez, do I have to reveal that I don't love my insert whatever the thing is, right? It becomes so obligatory. And it's one of those interesting spaces where, you know, being the parent and the teacher, and I think the stuff that crosses the barrier is the stuff that's carried by that love. Because that's one of the trickiest things, is when you start to see some harmonizing in your teaching world and your parent world, good stuff and bad stuff, you're going to carry those tools back and forth. I was helping out with an AQ course, and one of the adult students in there mentioned that they were entirely uncomfortable with speaking about themselves as a teacher in their parenting space and speaking in their teaching space like they're a parent. They brought no experiences back and forth. And I put out to the group, I said, that would be very challenging for me, because I would feel like, I get it that there's some things that you shouldn't talk about. I think it's good to have privacy, but this individual was saying absolutely. So I said, well, how do you then manage the good stuff? How do you then manage the strategies, that stuff that you know, the common landing ground in being in a school and being at home in your family is that it's a community. And some of the tools that can be used are, they're the exact same tools for building great relationships and sharing resources and having conversation. But this person was very specific, saying, no, I've got a totally different toolkit. And I thought, for me, that'd be way too complex. I want some harmony there. If something cool happens on the weekend with my family, I like to be able to share that in a context that's appropriate at school, and vice versa, you know, respecting the privacy. I love what you said about, you know, when we, I think we landed on this in the beginning, it was that idea about you gave space and time to an individual that was upset in the hallway. And if it wasn't in episode 4, it's been one of the conversations of your lived experience in that school and sort of being on hall duty and having other things that you kind of had to get to. So you really benched the teacher prioritizing. And I think you settled into your parent's side. I think you said you sat, I'm remembering back, like, this wasn't one of your students specifically. The student may have been known to you, but the humanizing effect of you just stopping, I would say definitely you were drawing from your parent toolkit just to be with the kid and sort of provide something else to fill the space that was around them, that was supportive and nurturing and caring for them. And I don't remember where you got with the conversation, but I doubt very much that you framed this as a negative experience, that there was some forward momentum and the kid kind of got on with the rest of the day. So I think that that's important too, is that in those spaces, you know, you're out in public and using your teacher head, totally on point. That I will tell you, lesson planning is just planning. We just happen to add the lesson on the front end, and a good plan means that you're structuring it in manageable pieces based on a reasonable understanding of the resources that you have, all bound by some sort of a time frame where we're going to hopefully all arrive at a common goal. That's like, you could lay that on anything, dude. You want to have a yard sale, you could use that framework too. So I appreciate that sort of clarifying. I've watched that as well. I've been the parent just listening to another parent explain a really important thing to the kid. And you can see when the lesson, everyone's checked out of it. They're just going through the motions. And if we're honoring the time and the place and trying to get to an outcome, it's got to be better than that. So that's where I'm at in that parent teacher.
Well, thanks for sharing, Chris.
You're welcome,
appreciate
bud.
That. So, okay, we talked about bag of work. We talked about the parent teacher dilemma. I'll call it. What was the first one?
Well, the first one was all our introductions. So it was a little bit of, I think we spent a lot of time sort of talking about what brought us to the side hustle. So what is it that we'd, it was funny. It was less about our hope of where to go, more honoring where we were. So we were sort of interested in shaking up our own podcasting worlds. We wanted to have a discussion frame where we could actively bring our lives into it. We also discussed briefly the idea that in the podcast, it really is about honoring the guest and allowing their story to come out. And you kind of check a little bit of your experience only goes so far, because that idea of having your experience, the risk of your experience as the facilitator, the interviewer, to overwhelm the story of the person that you find so awesome. So, you know, not stepping into that showcase limelight. So I think in order to sidestep that, you and I had stuff that we'd like to connect about and chat about and just hash out weekly. And I think we've proven that with, you know, we're now on our 15th episode. So that's where we were in that initial frame.
Okay. And well, thank you for the recap.
Yeah. Yeah.
I lost the first one. I don't know why. Homework for this week, Mr. Clough. Crazy teacher that keeps giving everybody homework.
Yeah, it's I think part of getting to the homework for this one. I think that the idea that we haven't landed effectively on this before, only because we landed on it, but there was no development to it. So here's one of the things that has popped up this past week. Is that, so you have, let's say, we mentioned the one kid, that one kid last week. And I think we got into that frame of that one kid that kind of got away. I want to bring it back to, but what about if that one kid remains in front of you? So it's not where you're let's say mourning the fact or wondering whatever happened with that one kid. It's where that one kid actually is in front of you on a daily basis. And what does that look like to sort of support that one kid when there is no choice? There is no choice. There's just, you don't have anything else. Everybody is kind of clicking off, trying to figure out what to do. Everyone is kind of like, we don't know what to do. So I think if we just bring in, and you did a great job of talking about when we have that intermittent break of 2 weeks, that one kid will no longer be in front of you. So what I'm going to do this week is I'm going to hyper-focus on how am I going to create some supportive contexts for that one kid where the 2 week break will actually take them away from me. So intentional, structural, like actual, put something in place, build a plan for that one kid while they're away. Even if every plan so far hasn't worked, be very specific and intentional in my planning.
Excellent, excellent homework. Can I tell you, I'm going to do a little bit. I'm going to try to do something this week that's not coming from you, but coming from me. My homework for this week, personally, is to survive the last week before Christmas break, because my kids last week were just like on fire. So this week is going to be a good one because I've got some good stuff planned. We have some big assignments that need to get done, and they know it. But we're also going to have some fun. I told them we're going to build in. I'm going to take my foot off the gas just a little bit and concentrate more on the steering so that we can get to Christmas break without ruining anybody's week, mine or theirs. And they're like, yeah, let's do it. So it'll be good. I know that, well, I don't know. I'm assuming your context, your environment is a little bit different. Is it? Are the kids pumped for Christmas, or is it like not really a big thing in the environment that you work in?
It hasn't popped up. You know, we have some ideas for next week about how we can celebrate some stuff where we try and inject a little bit of that lightness, a little bit of that positivity, and a little bit of that celebration into it. But there's nothing specific. We just have a couple bits that we're going to try and have some snacks, have some moments, have some conversations. Nothing specific. We have the list that we kind of did from last year, sort of on the daily. We'll meet Monday morning and figure out what we're gonna put into action. Sorry, my colleague and I will figure that out Monday morning.
Right on. Sounds good. Well, I hope you have a great week, and I hope next week we can be on the air again.
Yeah, for sure.
At the same time. Yeah, and I look forward to connecting with you. I sent you a really cool tweet earlier in our conversation. I saw a picture on the internet that just fit well into the talks you and I have been having about education. Maybe I'll drop it in the blog post for this podcast, and people can just look at it and do what they want with it. I'm not going to say more about it. It's just about the school system and how it seems to operate, and we'll let people do what they want with it. So have a great rest of your weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, bud. We'll chat.
See ya.